Ladies and gentlemen, please take your seats. The show is about to begin.
Welcome to Cavs, a podcast. I'm Nate Smith. I'm here with Write Down Euclid and Evil Genius.
I'm back.
He's back, baby.
Maybe I should have stayed away.
Unlike the Cavalier offense. Yeah, no kidding. What's up with that? Why you come back?
I don't know, man. I'm going to have to leave.
Yeah. So
I didn't watch either of the last two games, and they won them both. So I guess maybe I shouldn't watch game 6 or 7.
Yeah, and the Cavs tonight lose 83-96.
Felt like a lot more, though, didn't it? Felt like it was like a 20-point loss.
Well, you know, at that pace, it's equivalent of a 30-point loss in a, you know, a game with that much more scoring. So
yeah,
I mean,
I think the Celtics took about like at least 10 or 12 more shots than the Cavs did, because the Cavs turned it over so many times.
Yeah. Yeah, and the Celtics also had 7 offensive rebounds to the Cavs' 3. And, the Celtics had all the energy. They had the Cavs just turned it over a million times, like you said.
15, to be exact. 15 turnovers and 17 assists. Although, 2 of the assists happened in garbage time, so.
Yeah. Yeah, so they basically had a 1-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. The Celtics, 37% from the field, 33% from 3. They took 39 threes, and they were 21-23 from the free throw line, while the Cavs were 12-19. And then out rebounded the Cavs 45-39, and 18, like you said, 18 assists to 17 for the Cavs, and then only 8 turnovers for them. So if you had come into the game and saying, hey, you're going to help the Celtics to 37% from the field and 96 points, you'd have thought the Cavs would have won the game. But
yeah, not in Boston.
Not in Boston, yeah. As I said in the email chain, Ty Lue could screw up the Globetrotters.
Only he didn't say screw.
I didn't. But, God, there's so much to cover. But so if you had to pick one thing that you thought was the Cavs' biggest problem tonight, e.g., what would it be?
Tyronn Lue.
Okay. Okay, expound.
He didn't really react. You know, I mean, the problem with Tyronn Lue, the maddening part about him is he's always 1 or 2 steps late, or you know, about 5 minutes too late in game time or real time to make adjustments in game. And you know, when you've got your starting backcourt that is, I mean, they shot 2 for 11. You know, I don't know. You don't stick with those guys. You know,
yeah.
if the Celtics, Brad Stevens did something beyond just put Aaron Baines in the starting lineup tonight, which certainly threw things off a little bit, and I don't know why LeBron refuses to drive at Baines. The couple of times he did, he went right past him, and even though he got fouled, like, made the bucket, but like it happened literally twice in this game. LeBron seemed gassed from the start. I don't know why that is. I don't know if he just had a bad prep for it, or if they were really just forcing him to go through so many screens and try to do too much in the beginning. But I don't know, LeBron played 39 minutes and he looked like he played 49 minutes. He just looked out of gas the whole night, And, you know, it just is weird. Like, again, Kevin Love got a couple of ticky-tack fouls early, both of which were not fouls at all. Like, I don't even think he touched his man. Certainly not that second one. But Ty Lue just immediately, like, shelled up and was like, okay, we're going to get Kevin out of the game and let's put in Jeff Green along with Tristan. And that's just a recipe for disaster. And I think, look, people said, like, well, Brad Stevens, you know, outsmarted Ty Lue in the first two games, and then Ty Lue turned the tables on him in the second two, you know, by starting Tristan, and then, you know, Brad Stevens had a counterpunch tonight, which, again, wasn't just putting Baines in the starting lineup. It was he played only seven guys. Like,
yeah.
Yabusele and Nader got in for 3 minutes apiece at the end, but he played seven guys in this rotation. Yeah. That's it. And they're young guys, so they can do it. Right? I mean, like, Horford and Baines are the old men of the group. And Horford's, what, 31? Baines is, I think 29, 30. You know, these guys, they just went out and they played swarming defense all night for 48 minutes. Even the end, they were, like, swarming guys. Although, you know, the Cavs, Rodney Hood hit a couple shots going in, including a three. So at least he agreed to go into the garbage time tonight, which, as somebody said on the in response to me on the thread, probably means Ty Lue will start him next game. So
right, and
I mean, do you disagree with me that Ty Lue is the biggest problem in this game tonight?
No, I don't disagree with you. I mean, I was I was more just like specific things that he did, but no, I don't disagree with you. His rotations were god-awful. I mean, J.R. Smith clearly had nothing to give them in the second half.
And yet Korver only played 8 minutes until the fourth quarter.
And yet J.R. Smith kept playing and playing and playing, and five personal fouls, only one turnover, 1 for 6 from the field, just minus 19 from the floor, just was a disaster.
Yeah.
George Hill, again, super passive on the road, not looking for a shot. I feel like the Cavs have to make it a point of emphasis every game to get George Hill going early. I mean, in the first half, he just did not look for a shot at all. Yeah. And it was... And I can live with the 1 for 5. I mean, that's not what the issue is. The issue is just they sag off him so much that you're playing 4 on 5. And then Tristan Thompson, you know, I almost felt like when they started Baines, they should have done the you're going to zig, I'm going to zag thing, and, you know, started Kevin at the 5 and then played Kyle Korver and just said, you know, we're going to just outshoot you.
Sure.
But they didn't do that. It was just terrible decision after terrible decision. The Cavs passed when they should shoot. They shot when they should have passed. They shot way too many threes. How many threes did they shoot that game? 34, 9 for 34. They were just three hunting at the end of that game. I thought that the critical stretch was, you know, they had a shot to come back. They had cut it in the fourth quarter. I believe they'd cut it to 12.
No, it was I think it was even maybe 10 at one point.
Yeah.
Oh, they could have cut it to 8 on that LeBron breakaway, and instead he threw the ball away, and then Tatum came back down and hit a 3. So instead of being down 8, all of a sudden they were like down 15 again.
Yeah. Well, that was the third quarter.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, that was the third quarter, and the Cavs had cut it to, I want to say, what do we got here? The Cavs had cut it to 12 when Green hit that corner 3-ball.
Oh yeah,
and I think I wrote it.
This game is over now that Jeff Green hit that corner 3.
And then the Celtics took a timeout, and I was just like, and then it got all the way down to 6 minutes, and I'm like, why does Ty Lue still have this bench lineup in?
Yeah.
And Korver missed a 3, and then Clarkson missed 2 straight 3s. James missed a 2-pointer at the basket, and
That second shot that Clarkson, second three that Clarkson hit when he, his like legs like went like scissored. Yeah, it was like, wow, dude, what are you doing? Like, I don't know if he was trying to sell a foul or what.
I just think he just does not know how to be in the moment. You know what I mean? Like, he just gets too excited, too worked up. And of course, LeBron misses a layup.
He's the scarecrow.
Yeah, and Horford.
If I only had a brain.
Yeah, so LeBron missed a layup, and then the Celtics come back and throw an alley-oop to Horford to put him up 14 with about 5 minutes and 50 seconds left, and that was a game.
You could tell. Yeah, you could tell it was over at that point. I mean,
That's just, it was one of a million. There was actually three different points in that game where there were 5 point, 4 or 5 point swings.
Yeah.
And that was one of three of them.
Here's the maddening thing, though, that I'm sure is probably being said by Ty Lue as we speak at the presser, post game presser, which is, well, you know, we were in every quarter except the first one.
Right.
Which is exactly what the Celtics could say about game four. You know? Yeah. And I think the Cavs are ultimately going to really regret coughing up game two and wasting a really good LeBron performance early. You know, that will probably come back to haunt them. I mean, you never know. I mean, look, I fully expect the Cavs will have a bounce back game in game six, and I think the Celtics won't try to exert themselves too hard because I think they know they've been unbeatable at home. So I think, you know, and the NBA loves a game seven, so I fully expect it'll go to seven. And, you know, anything can happen in a game seven, but that's the thing I said on the thread. Like, LeBron better hit his cryo chamber before game seven. But
I still think the Cavs are going to win this series, but Ty Lue could screw that up. Let's just put it that way. I mean,
Like we haven't heard from RDE. What did you see, man?
Yeah, if you had one thing that was the biggest takeaway from this game,
The one thing that the Cavs did poorly or was to blame for this loss.
Yeah, I mean, it was great to see three starters in triple digits, which means we had three starters that combined for 10 points being triple digits. But I actually...
And who were those starters?
I'll give you three guesses. I mean, I think Tristan...
Well, the George Hill, J.R. Smith, and
Tristan
Thompson combined for 10 points. You got to remember, there's people that listen to podcasts, don't watch the game, so...
Got it.
We are news. Sometimes fake news, but yeah.
I feel sorry for people getting news from us. But I think... I was actually really frustrated with LeBron's approach from the get-go. I think he kind of came out and he was pretty aggressive at first, but then took a few shots where it was like, okay, he's trying to go hero ball. He wants this to be another big garden game for him. And he took some kind of fancy fall-away shots that didn't go in and then just kind of stopped facilitating and stopped playing his best. And then Love, we tried to go, I think pretty early on, we tried to go bully ball with Love, which doesn't seem to ever work in this series. And just from the get-go, it seemed like LeBron and Love kind of threw in the towel. Although Love ended up having a strong first quarter, so mostly it was LeBron. And I mean, I think LeBron just came out and set a bad tone for the game. And our whole offense, once again, just kind of shut down after that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a good point. So what the Celtics did was basically any time that the Cavs got LeBron or Kevin Love on a switch, they were sending a double-team guy, and often that double-team guy was Al Horford, and which makes throwing that skip pass really hard. And, of course, nobody's cutting weak side. Nobody cut weak side until LeBron cut through late in the game off that feed from Kevin Love. To get an and one, but, you know, nobody cuts weak side, and, you know, if you try and get it done with skip passes all the time, it's just not going to happen. So the Cavs just did not know how to deal with that double team and, you know, never adjusted. And they kind of played, like you were saying, give up ball after that. And, yeah, I thought LeBron had one of his worst games in a while. I mean, I thought he was abysmal in game one. And in this game, yeah, he just threw the ball away too many times. He didn't value the ball, and
six times, and it felt like more. He just was really sloppy in his. I mean, normally his turnovers are ones of what do they say, commission instead of omission. But it felt like, this was just LeBron being sloppy and not really. Like that pass in transition to Jeff Green, which he just like kind of ricocheted off his chest. It's like that you should never make that pass. It's just,
I don't know about that one. That one, they showed that on the replay, and maybe it was because they showed it in slow motion, but I was like, you know, he just looked like a Browns receiver out there. I was like, it only hit him in the hands.
Yeah, you know? But it was a bullet pass, and you're not expecting that at that.
Yeah.
And it's just a weird, it was an awkward angle. You know what I mean? Like, LeBron should have just gone to the hoop. Like,
well, he had about really three or four times, where he should have just gone to the bucket, and instead of doing that, he passed it and either turned it over, or the guy didn't make the shot.
Wasn't that weird, like floater shot that he tried? I don't know. I'll be honest. I really didn't.
You know what that was? It was the Anton Jameson. I was like, "Oh my God, LeBron just turned 40!" Shot.
He looked like he was 40 in this game, man. Like, I know he had 26 points, 10 rebounds, 5 assists, but he really just didn't look. He didn't look good. Didn't look himself. He looked tired the whole game. He made that first 3-pointer, and again, I think it was he kind of Jeff Greened himself. He hit that first one, and then he missed the next 5 that he took. He was just settling for outside shots all night long.
This game, we can say he Jordan Clarksoned himself. Or as I call him now, Jordan Clankson.
Although, Clarkson actually made more shots tonight than he has in any other game, I think.
Yeah, well, he had a nice second quarter, and then he played 2 minutes too long in the fourth.
Yeah.
He
did, but he kind of killed that the drive. You know, once he single handedly like fueled the run in the second quarter, and then came and killed it with a couple of back to back mysteries after he made the two.
Yeah,
I mean Clarkson also had some big defensive plays too. I think it was in the second half, right?
When he did. He along with Nance, and I thought Larry Nance was the Cavs. You know, one of the Cavs' best players tonight.
Oh yeah.
I thought him getting up and giving a shove. So yeah, in the second quarter, Marcus Morris was yelling at Larry Nance, taunting again, which he didn't get called for earlier in the series.
I thought for sure that the Morris twins, who are pieces of garbage anyways, I really felt like that they had done a Prince and the Pauper, and like Markeith and Marcus had switched places, and like, let's see if they recognize, you know, because that's just stuff that Markeith would usually do with getting people's faces, so... That'd be maybe. Funny if that was actually the truth, like somebody uncovered that, like, weird... You know, like thing, like
you heard it here first.
That's my theory, and I'm sticking to it.
Yeah, I mean, Larry Nance basically got up, shoved Marcus Morris, and the Cavs got some energy there, and I felt like they needed more of that chippiness.
Yeah,
they didn't have enough of it. Like I said, you know, before the game, like they should address Perkins for this game, just to you know throw a little static at Baines.
Yeah,
you know.
Well, they actually, I mean, there was enough of a break after that technical that it almost gave the Cavs an opportunity to switch the momentum.
It did switch the momentum.
Yeah, they went on a 12-3 run after that.
Well, yeah. And the Cavs actually got the better part of that exchange because...
Sorry.
The Celtics had 2 techs to the Cavs' 1, so Kyle Korver hit a free throw and then hit a 3-pointer, so it was a 4-point possession. So it ended up working out in their favor, but yeah, they went on a nice run in the second, and then of course, that lineup went away and the starters came back in, and the Boston starters just gave them a better, they just outplayed the Cavs starters by a lot, I mean.
Which isn't hard to do when your entire backcourt decides not to actually contribute.
Yeah, well,
and the hard part too is that JR usually when he's not shooting well, at least is playing decent defense. Man, he got burned. He was just playing stupid defense. He got burned a lot by Tatum tonight.
Yeah, and he had two very dumb fouls in the penalty where he just gave him free points, basically. And then, of course, nobody expects YOLO Marcus Smart to drain, you know,
someone called it in pregame, I think.
Yeah, five just ridiculous shots from the perimeter, three of them three-pointers. And then... Yeah.
Well, no, he had those two, I think I said the one time in his life that Marcus Smart has ever used a glass on purpose.
Yeah.
When he banked that one floater in, and then he went down and had another insane, like, just throw it up and see if it goes in drive to go with his three-pointers. But that's Marcus Smart. That's what he does. You know, once every three or four games, he'll hit a few, and you'll think, oh, no, we have to look out for Marcus Smart. But the truth is you really don't. The thing I really don't get, and this speaks, again, to Ty Lue and Longobardi and their absolute, the Cavs' just absolute inability to play, to recognize things on defense. Like, there were two times that I just sort of did a face palm in my living room, because the first one was, I think, towards the end of the first quarter, and the Celtics ran a play where they double screen up top to get Jaylen Brown open, who's like running around the side, and I could see it coming from a mile away, but somehow the Cavs couldn't, you know. And it's like the Celtics ran that play at least five times tonight to get Jaylen Brown open threes on the wing. And then the other thing is that Jason Tatum, literally every time he gets the ball top of the key, he dribbles to his left and then stops, steps to his right and shoots every time. How do you not stop that?
Yeah,
he's a rookie, he's 20 years old. It's not like you can't figure that out.
They cannot figure that out. Like, the Cavs just have too many, you know, minus defenders on the wing. They got J.R. Smith and the other guy, Jeff Green. They're just minus defenders on the wing.
But how does J.R. go from really getting a good handle on Oladipo to two series later just completely dropping off?
He didn't really have a great handle on Oladipo. They just double-teamed him so much. I felt like any time Oladipo had J.R. Smith one-on-one, J.R. Smith was pretty much on roller skates.
I thought those guys did. Both Green and J.R. did a better job on DeRozan, but the thing with DeRozan is he doesn't really have a three-point shot. He's been better at it this year, but when he panics, when you defend him even a little bit, he's going to come in and try to either drive or shoot the long two, and they can defend that. But they can't defend, they can't seem to close out these guys, you know, on threes, and the Celtics were just bombing from three from the opening whistle tonight. Like, they were just, I mean, that seemed to be their plan, was we'll just park Baines in the middle, and we'll just, everyone else will just shoot. And the problem is, if you're going to do that, you've got to make them pay for having Baines on the floor. And the Cavs didn't do that, because LeBron didn't drive, and the shooters weren't knocking down shots.
Yeah, and I almost think a bigger issue is the way the Cavs worked their offense. It was like they took the very first semi-open shot that was available instead of making the defense work. Like, and the problem was the ball moved so slowly in those ISO situations. Like, when they swung the ball and the ball moved and they made Boston move bodies, then they got good looks. But when, you know, Kevin Love would get the ball, you know, fading away in the corner or whatever, they wouldn't get it. Yeah. But it was like the very first semi-open look they took every time. And they never made the Boston defense work and rarely moved the ball and just didn't trust the pass. You know, like I said, they passed when they should shoot and they shot when they should pass. Like, especially in transition, they should have just gone to the basket more. But
yeah,
you know, in the half court, they just never worked the offense and never made Boston play defense.
Yep.
And maybe part of that was because they were afraid of the officiating. Like, Boston was getting a lot of calls. But, you know, you at least got to give your offense a chance, and they didn't do that.
Yep. But there's no excuse to play J.R. Smith and Jeff Green 26 minutes each and play Kyle Korver 19. Most of
especially
a lot of that was in garbage time.
Yeah, and when they're and when those two are abjectly awful.
Awful.
I mean, J.R. Smith was abysmal in the third and early fourth quarter.
Yeah. And how about this? Kevin Love, even though Ty took him out with the two fouls early, didn't pick up another one and still wound up playing 31 minutes. So
yeah,
it's like, you know, it's a playoffs, dude. Like, use your you're going to use your fouls. You're obviously going to use your fouls in a game like this where clearly, I mean, these referees were... I don't usually complain about the referees. I mean, I probably do, but...
Yeah, in the first half, they were garbage.
Abjectly horrible. And actually, that was the good thing about the fisticuffs that happened, because that actually got things tightened up a bit, and they were starting to make calls on some of the illegal screens and some of the clearly obvious jersey grabs. But,
yeah,
you know, but up until that point, I'm with you. Like, I was really happy to see Nance fight back right there. And man, what a bitch Terry Rozier is. Like, you see him scratch. Wow. Like, scratch. Oh, I'm serious. Like Morris is a turd, but and he's a fake tough guy, because the Morris twins are idiots, man. Like, they can't, you know, they're always talking. They rarely back it up, you know, and it's annoying to see them get even a little bit of, you know, of whatever going. But those guys talk all the time, and they're just garbage players. The NBA would be a better place when the Morris twins are gone. However, for Terry Rozier to push his little punk ass in there and scratch Larry Nance's shoulder, I'm like, what, dude? If you're gonna
what
do something,
that?
Who? It's a, you know what it is? It's a total like woman move. Like, he like I'm gonna scratch you with my net. I was like, you know what? That guy should get kicked out of the game and have his freaking card revoked. Like, I know business.
Should have started Perk, and I'm telling you,
if maybe they will game six.
Well, if they can get, I'm not so worried about game six. Like, if they can't win game six at home, then they don't deserve to win the series. But
they won't have a choice.
Yeah, well, I know, but game seven, if they make it back to Boston, they need to start Perk.
And I just hope, you know, Terry Rozier realizes what a bitch he is. That's all I'm saying.
I think you're underestimating how slow Perk is. I mean,
I'm not underestimating how slow. Like, you, I just think he just needs to lay some illegal screens on people.
Yeah, I just worry
he needs to go full on Kelly Olynyk retribution on some people. So.
Yeah, I picture him now as such a slow lumbering player that he's going to try and level a screen, but the ball's going to be going down the other side of the court.
Right,
by the time
exactly.
He does it.
Yeah, like, he's moving in slow. It's like that Star Trek where he's moving in slow motion and everybody else is in like real time.
My favorite moment of the game was, I mean, when Nance came in and kind of caused the ruckus and started playing winning ball. I was trying to think of a nickname for him, and then I was looking up his dad's old nickname. Do you guys know what Larry Nance Sr.'s nickname is?
No.
It is the High Ayatollah of Slamola.
I've never heard him call that, and I grew up watching him.
That is fantastic.
Who called him
wow.
that?
I mean, I just Googled Larry Nance nickname, and that came up.
Is that a college thing? Because I don't remember him being called out in the NBA.
I think it was associated with his slam dunk win, the slam dunk competition.
Maybe, yeah.
The High Ayatollah of Slamola. I like it.
Up there with the Hick from French Lick, maybe one of the best nicknames of all time.
Yeah, I mean, I loved his energy that game. I feel like, you know, and I've said it, why is Jeff Green getting 25 minutes and Larry Nance getting 17? Like, Larry Nance gives him so much more. He had four blocks in 17 minutes. Like, how is he not playing more? It's just, it's mind-boggling. And, you know, how is Chetty Osman plus five in 3 minutes? How, you know, how is he not playing more?
Well, the commentator made, I think, what Jeff Green said, oh, some... a really nice defensive play by Ante Zizic. I thought, man, I've wanted to hear that a long time ago.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, it's just these rotations with it, that lineup they started the fourth quarter with. Was it the plague lineup? I think it was.
Yeah,
it was
no Larry. No love, no LeBron. I don't think Kyle was out there either. I think it was just
it was Larry, Jeff Green, Jordan.
Lineup.
Yeah, the plague lineup.
Yeah. By the way, just to clarify what I said earlier, I hope no women were offended by what I said about Terry Rozier, because in fact, that's not even a woman thing to do. That's like a
child
thing to do. And I certainly didn't mean bitch in a derogatory way to
women.
Well,
the female dog.
No, Joe, the guy who fights like that. I mean,
yeah, it's who like, does that?
Yeah, I mean, it was really pretty. I had a lot of respect for Terry Rozier.
I felt like I was watching
before that happened.
On TNT.
Yeah, but I had a lot of respect for the guy, being a guy from like Youngstown, Cleveland area, and worked really hard. You know, he stepped in and you know filled in for Kyrie when Kyrie went down. You know, and I've actually been a real fan of Rozier's game, but something like that, I'm not gonna forget that. Like that's just garbage. There's no
Can you
room.
Really
again.
Scratch him?
Scratched him. Like you could see it, like claw marks down his arm. Like I was like, they're gonna have to go give him like mop him up for that, because it looked like it was bleeding too. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, Terry Rozier needs to cut his nails, and then he also needs to like man up and actually, if you're gonna take it to somebody, like shove them or something, then don't scratch them.
Yeah, I mean he was it was interesting. I mean I'm trying to make a joke here and it's just not working. I'm trying to, who is the girl? He's a Niecy Nash from Claws on TNT. Yeah, I went a long way for that.
Yeah, you
terrible.
Did. You went deep for that.
It's yeah, like, and the problem is none of the Cavs games for this series are on TNT. They're all on ESPN. So
right. Well, the good news about that is that Doris Burke gets to be our sideline commentator, and for the most part, we don't get ridiculousness. Although there's always going to be Mark Jackson and Jeff Van Gundy ridiculousness. But
although they weren't that bad tonight, and there was a couple, like that one ridiculous charge call that Larry Nance got called for.
Oh, yeah.
Aaron Baines.
Yeah.
Where I was like, Jeff Van Gundy had a great line. He said, you get rid of that play, you got to get rid of the NBA. Yeah. I mean, it was just...
It was clearly in the restricted area. Now, I could see why... I mean, first of all, it was a really delayed whistle, but I could see why, because on the slow motion replay, it did look like Nance elbowed Baines in the side of the face, so maybe call it for that. But I don't know. I mean,
yeah,
it's tough. It's a tough call.
Yeah, but, man, do I hate this Boston team.
Yeah, I mean that's what I was thinking. Is I would have actually not minded losing to the Raptors all that much, but. Losing to this team is just so frustrating if we do.
Yeah. Yeah, and, Al Horford, one of my least favorite players ever. And to lose in a way where you hold the team to 37% from the field and you still lose, and you shoot 42% from the field and you still lose, it's horrible.
When you let the other team have 11 more shots than you take... Well, and you turn the ball, and you turn, and then turn the ball over 15 times, and you go 9 of 34 from three.
And they make 4 more threes
than you do. Yeah. Yeah, and you shoot 63% from the line. Yeah. And that's the problem. You're shooting yourself in the head, which is what the Cavs have done.
It does feel like they were content, as you stated the other day, Nate, they're content to just play 16 good games, and they kind of know it. But the weird thing, and maybe the reason to be potentially optimistic, is the game was still eminently winnable, which is very frustrating because you can see so many times when we could have gone on a run, or if we were just 5 points closer, it would have been a game. So maybe that's a good thing, that even though when they came out almost laying down from the beginning, they still had a shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Yeah, and Kevin Love did that thing at the beginning where he hit a couple threes early and then just went three hunting, and he was pretty bad. He was a game low minus 22. He just could kind of, they could never overcome his offensive deficiencies, and
he had a great block on Baines, though.
Yeah, he did. He had a great block. He had some great plays, but they could never string enough of them together.
Well, he missed a wide-open corner three in the third when LeBron sat down, which could have gotten him, I think, within maybe 12 at that point. But
the weird thing is it seems like he has actually pretty good clutch D, despite what we all have expected. He's got really good clutch D, particularly in the fourth quarter, but his clutch gene on offense seems to be failing this year.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll give you that. The other, and obviously as you pointed out, you cannot win when you have three starters combined to go 2-for-14 like Tristan, JR, and George Hill did. I mean, Tristan, they tried posting him up a couple times early and both times he missed, and I was like, what is this? This is a terrible idea.
Yeah.
They just had so many stretches where they just made awful decisions on offense.
Yeah.
Like, they had that stretch in the second quarter, or it was late first, early second, where they just took three straight terrible jump shots and then turned it over.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, you just can't give away possessions like that.
Yeah, but look, it wasn't, I don't know that the Boston starters were much better. I mean, Rozier was 1 of 12 at one point, and
no, they weren't much better.
Jaylen Brown, he and Jaylen Brown combined to go 7 of 30, you know, for...
Right.
Now, granted, Brown got to the line a bunch, so he got his points. But you know what? The difference in the game were the sixth and seventh man for the Celtics, because Marcus Morris and Marcus Smart both hit 3 of 6 threes, and they both had 13 points, and they were aggressive defensively and offensively. And you know, right there, I mean, that's a huge boost for them. From the guys that, you know, the two guys that Brad Stevens brought off the bench. So if you're going to get if you're going to get that kind of production, you know, I mean, the Cavs played four guys off the bench, you know, significant minutes. And, you know, I think they still only combined to, what, 10, 20, you know, for 25 points, so 1 point less than the two guys did on the Celtics bench. So
yeah, but the other way of looking at that is if Larry Nance gets 10 more minutes and Tristan Thompson gets 10 fewer, and if Kyle Korver gets 10 more minutes and J.R. Smith gets 10 fewer, then, you know, this might be a Cavs win. It's just managing lineups, and Ty Lue is just simply not doing it. He cannot recognize in the moment or when planning the game what his best lineups are, and it is killing the Cavs, especially on the road.
Well, that's the weird thing is, because, I mean, if your alternative to JR was Jetty, you'd be like, okay, fine, he's just not playing Jetty. But with Korver at 19 minutes, he could have easily just swapped those Korver and JR minutes. JR wouldn't have thought anything of it if he's getting subbed out for Korver.
And you can say, oh, well, Korver's, they're going to go after him on defense, but he couldn't have been worse on defense than JR was. I mean, JR was just a train wreck, and Korver's not, you know, if Korver's going to make a foul, it's going to be like a strip foul on a shot. It's not going to be a stupid foul. Like, JR just giving points away, and it's just, and just bricking threes. And when they came out in the third quarter and were starting trying to set him up for threes, I was like, why don't you get him a play going to the basket? You know, if a guy's struggling from downtown, you know, don't get him a play shooting another three, get him a play going to the basket. But it's just when they put him in these isolation positions where he tries to score on somebody, like, they just ran so many dumb isolations. They had J.R. Smith running dumb isolations. They had Tristan Thompson running dumb isolations. They had, you know, I guess those were the two really bad ones. But, well, and then Larry Nance would get good isolations and wouldn't shoot. He would, like, try and force a pass, and I was like, you've got Jaylen Brown on you, you know, Tristan Thompson's going to post that guy up, you're a much better post player than Tristan Thompson. Take that shot, you know.
Yeah.
But they wouldn't do it. I mean, it's just pass when you should shoot, shoot when you should pass. So I don't know.
Yeah, the worst is I had an article pop into my Google feed today. It was J.R. Smith quote was the headline, and saying he loves nothing better than going out on the road and silencing a crowd.
Well, apparently they should have had the dog. I guess the fact that they did not have the North Carolina baseball team golden retriever there on the in the locker room was a bad omen for the Cavs.
I read that too, and I was like, oh, yeah. when they said he wasn't going to be there tonight, I'm like, oh crap.
Yeah, so the team's thinking about getting a therapy dog, and I'm like, I was like, yeah, whatever works.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Of course, then LeBron said, they said LeBron could care less.
Well, LeBron clearly does not need a therapy dog.
Which means he's leaving, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So, I guess my question to you guys, So, LeBron, do you think it was just a bad game? Do you think he wasn't feeling well? Is this just the season catching up with him? I mean, or is there just not enough information to draw a conclusion? Does he bounce back? What do you think, EG?
Oh, I think he bounces back. I don't think he'll let the season end in Cleveland. I think he'll be motivated to come out and play well, and I think the guys who play better at home than on the road will play well, and I think the Celtics, to a degree, while they'll put up an effort like they usually do, you know, I think the Cavs should be able to win Game 6 and force a Game 7, but I don't know. I mean, I honestly don't know if LeBron's going to have enough gas left in the tank to have, you know, back-to-back with just a day in between Herculean efforts to, you know, to pull it through. I wouldn't bet against him, like most people make the mistake of doing in the national media, but I also can see where, you know, it might just be one step too far, one too many things to ask him for. Yeah. And
It's tough, because I feel like he's got to not only overcome the Celtics, but he's got to overcome his own head coach.
Well, and there's also that. I mean, look, it's always a get me enough to get to the finals, and we'll take it from there. But you know, it doesn't feel like he should have enough to get to the finals. Like, it just doesn't feel like a team that had anything at point guard for him would be struggling like this against the Celtics.
Yeah.
Not saying even Kyrie would be the. I mean, certainly Kyrie would make a difference, but you know, but even a Jose Calderon in his prime, or George Hill from the Spurs or Indiana, maybe would be helpful. But you know, I don't know if it's a question of these guys just haven't played long enough with him, or they just can't. I mean, you know, I've heard it said that maybe that's exactly why LeBron needs, is for somebody who can just play their own game off of him, even though he always sort of denies that. But like, he was always at his best when he had a Dwayne Wade or a Kyrie, as somebody who could
your
just,
turn, my turn guy.
Yeah, just somebody who could create their own shot, kind of like what Chris Paul's doing for James Harden right now in that series.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that LeBron doesn't have that guy, and Kevin Love can't be that guy because he can't create his own offense.
And clearly Jordan Clarkson is not that guy.
not this version of Jordan Clarkson. I mean, you know, look, I've seen him play games where he's been pretty amazing, not necessarily for the Cavs or this year, but when he played for the Lakers. But you know, when there's no pressure, as you're the quarterback off the bench coming in to, you know, mop up and, you know, maybe lead a ragtag Laker team to a few victories, you know, like, you know, and you can just pretty much hoist it like, you know, 15, 20 times a game if you feel like it, without anybody stopping you. That's a different kind of guy, and Clarkson needs a better coach. He needs somebody who can put him. Yeah. Again, he probably needs someone like a Brad Stevens who could put him in positions to win, right? Or positions to maximize his talent and not. Because I think under Ty Lue, Terry Rozier might be Jordan Clarkson. Do you know what I mean? Like that's kind of the irony of the situation. So I'm not yet willing to admit that Brad Stevens is a great coach, because I think he really showed down in games 3 and 4 by getting outcoached a bit by Ty Lue. But I'm on the road to saying that he's a very good coach, and if his ragtag group of youngsters, you know, plus Al Horford can you know, overturn the Cavs in this series, even if they get swept in the finals, that's still a big stepping stone on the way to, you know, to earning the hype he's had for the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
I mean, what I didn't get is why. And it would be pretty easy to look at this game and say the Cavs were kind of saving it in the tank. They know they only have to win one game in Boston, and this isn't going to be it. But then why did LeBron come back in the fourth quarter?
Yeah, and they even said something, you know, the Cavs are down 20 here. Why are you even playing LeBron?
Yeah, and he honestly, like, he wasn't mailing it in either. I mean, there was a stretch right at the very end where they had one last, like, flurry of defense, and LeBron was playing hard, so it's a little confusing or disconcerting as to why, if he's playing under control, why he was playing so hard at certain stretches during this game.
I will say the one thing is stuff does carry over even in garbage time to the next game for your confidence, and you know, and maybe if you think you can get something going a little bit, you do that and get a guy going. But yeah, I don't. LeBron's not that guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, LeBron's.
No, he doesn't need any more. I mean, he'll be the first guy in the gym hoisting shots at, you know, like 1 p.m. the game day too. Which, you know, I mean, look, we all conveniently forget that the dude actually played all 82 games this year and averaged
the most
minutes of almost anybody in the NBA. I mean, I know Brian Windhorst doesn't.
No, not almost.
He did. I know, but that'll catch up with you, and especially. You know, of game 5 of the Eastern Conference Finals, where you kind of hope it wouldn't, but it has. It
seems. And you've already played a 7-game series in this year's playoff.
Yeah.
And I do think, I mean, I'm kind of over the comments in the thread about, oh, LeBron doesn't want to go up against the Warriors and he's going to wait to see if Houston has a chance to see. Like, I think that's total BS.
Yeah, it is. Silly.
But
well, obviously, if Houston wins last night, you would think, oh, now's the time to put the foot on the gas.
Yeah.
I do think there's probably an element, just because he is human, of you know, I mean, he's tired. He's been at this for how many straight years? I mean, he said it in the post games. How often now? He's just kind of talked about how tired he is.
Yeah.
And he's kind of gone. I'm not the first person to say this, but he's gone Danny Glover. I'm too old for this shit.
Yeah, what was it he said? He said he didn't have too many more final or playoff appearances to be buying people suits. in the article about the suits.
Well, he also, it was weird that he said that, made that comment after last game about, y'all don't know the whole story of my childhood, but, you know, when I'm playing time is done, you'll hear it. I'm like, why are you talking about that?
He's made that comment a few times before.
Yeah, but this one, I don't know, somehow this stuck out to me. Like, it took me immediately to thoughts of, like, Joe Thomas and Jim Brown and guys like that. Because I got to be honest with you, like, the thought occurred to me that, you know, LeBron, I mean, the reason why people don't bring up the whole LeBron, Chris Paul, you know, fighting for the 5-year Supermax, and then, like, why wouldn't they then take advantage of that themselves, is that LeBron James makes more money outside of basketball than he does in playing basketball. Yeah. So, that, you know, I mean, if he retired at the end of the season, he'd still probably make more money than anybody in the NBA next year just from his farewell tour shoe endorsements. You know what I mean? Like, that's just the fact of
reality. So do you think there's a chance that he
retires? I don't want to necessarily be, like throwing that out there as a conspiracy theory, but if you think about it, like, I just stop and think about it, right? So you're LeBron James. You're 33 years old. You'll be 34 midway through the next season. You've already pretty much beaten, you own almost every record in the record book except for total points, which if you want to get that, you're going to have to play at least 5 more years to beat Kareem, right? Because Kareem just played till he was 45 or whatever, or 42. So you think about that, right? So he owns most of the records. The chances of him winning another championship start to decline, because if you look at the places he could actually go, right, the places that have been the, unless there's a dark horse candidate out there, like somebody said the other day, like, oh, maybe he'll go back to Miami because he really likes it in South Beach, and that would mean he would just, you know, play with two franchises, you know, and you could probably put enough pieces around him there to compete at least in the East, right? But like, for him to go to Houston, we all know that there's huge cap problems there. And oh, by the way, if Houston somehow gets past Golden State anyways, what do they need LeBron James for, right? So it's sort of like if he were to go there, well, then
what did the Warriors need Kevin Durant for?
Well, they lost in the finals.
Oh, that's true.
So yeah, okay. But my point is that Houston would have to completely restructure their team. They'd have to find somebody to take Ryan you know, the guy that never plays now, the Ryan Anderson. And then they'd still have to convince LeBron and Chris Paul to take pay cuts. Just so they could have those three guys and like maybe Capella and a bunch of like, you know, D League players around them, right? So that's that scenario. For him to go to Philly, the biggest problem with the Philly thing is that they need outside scorers to go along with Embiid, who plays a middle-end game, and Simmons, who can't really shoot. And Simmons has to have the ball in his hands. So, as somebody said, unless LeBron's willing to, at this stage of his career, go be an off-ball guy that stands in the corner and shoots threes, or like, you know, or uses that to drive, this, you know, you're only going to Philly if you probably, you know, you're probably trading Simmons, maybe? I don't know. I mean, you know he likes Simmons, but, like, how can you both those guys have the ball? You can justify it in Houston where both of those guys can shoot really well, but how do you justify that in Philly? So there's that hurdle, right? New York, they don't have any. And they have Fizdale, and they have Kristaps, who might be ready by the end of next season, right? And so you look at all these different scenarios that people have floated out there for where LeBron could go. The Lakers, sure, but he needs to go to the Lakers with Paul George, and even LeBron and Paul George and the little bits that they have there doesn't guarantee you you're even getting out of the second round in the West. So I don't know. Like, you look at that, and you're LeBron, you're sitting down this summer, and you're like, well, what are my options, right? Like, where would I go? And do I just stay here and take a bunch of money? But, I mean, whatever, I've got money. Like, do I need to sign this Supermax? So maybe I just hang it up and be like the guy that, like, said, hey, you know what? I played 15 years. I was never injured. I have a majority of record. I'm retiring as the, you know, probably the top three all-time player. I can only probably lose finals from here and you know, lessen my record. I mean, 3-6 isn't so bad. I don't know. I mean, honestly, I could see him making that decision and saying, you know what, I'm going to go run my production company in L.A. and endorse products and, you know, and then one day I'll own a team. Although I do think he needs the Supermax money to be able to buy the team from Gilbert eventually.
Yeah, I mean, I was gonna.
And that's $250,000.
I mean, I've read that his net worth is estimated to be somewhere around $400 million. So, Even he, I don't think he's
turning away from that. I mean, he would have to be the face of an ownership group.
Yeah.
For that to happen, rather than, you know, he would have to be the Derek Jeter of what Derek Jeter is to the Marlins, you know.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. I do think the theme, EG, though, that you're touching on of there is a ton of uncertainty and figuring out, he has to be asking himself pretty hard, where is his place in the current NBA over the next five years? Because I think it is, I mean, who knows, maybe he'll cook something up with, I mean, I don't know if it's necessarily Paul George. I think he'd love to have him, but I don't think they're going to, I don't think they're going to make, insist on that working. But, I'm going on a bit here, but I think he's probably pretty confused about what to do next.
Yeah, well, he's probably not thinking about it yet. I mean, I'm sure it's in the back of his mind. But also, I feel like the more people, and I know he goes zero dark 23 or whatever, although I still think he looks at the stuff just to remember it for later. But I think, I mean, everybody in the world is saying, oh, he's beyond gone, he's left already, whatever. I mean, you know, and everybody that says, oh, it's because of Dan Gilbert, I can point to, well, every other place they've talked about. I mean, like, you think he's going to go to Philly if he fundamentally disagrees on politics?
The hedge fund guy?
Yeah. Yeah. And you're like, those guys are, like, some of the biggest, like, you know,
weasels?
Right-wing supporters out there, right? So,
yeah.
I don't know. I don't think it'll come down to that. I think it's either...
I'll give you a dark horse.
Yeah.
Dallas.
I don't think
he could see
play for Mark Cuban.
You don't think so?
No, I don't think so. I don't think they get along.
Republic enemy number one for Donald Trump?
Yeah, I don't think so. And I think Dallas is still too big of a rebuilding project.
I'll agree with you, but he does have a connection with Dennis Smith Jr. He does. They do have a bunch of cap room and could probably figure out a way to maybe move one of those deals to sign him to the max. Or the other thing, here's the other thing.
But Dirk would have to retire. Dirk would have to retire for that to happen.
Yeah. Yeah. The other thing is, if he goes to another team and if he wants to compete for a championship on another team, he's got to take less money.
Absolutely.
He can't take a max. The max is just going to strap the team he goes to too much.
Yeah.
To be able to afford him. I mean, Los Angeles.
Yeah.
You know, they can maybe sign two max guys, and then what do they have around them? You know, yeah, they've got some good players. They got Kyle Kuzma. They got Lonzo Ball. They've got, but that's literally probably it.
Yeah.
Well, and they've got who's the young kid.
Josh Hart.
Ingram.
Oh, Ingram.
No, Ingram.
Sleepy
and
eyes.
Josh Hart, yeah. But, I mean, aside from those guys, they don't have a lot of other room. I mean...
Well, and that's the problem. And is maybe what comes with LeBron, right? Initially, what comes with LeBron is the stuff that he brought to Miami or the stuff that he brought to Cleveland. Like, you're going to have to take a Mike Miller type, right? You're going to have to take, you know, like, this is just James Jones guy.
If he didn't lobby for whoever he went to trade for Kyle Korver. Oh,
yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, Kyle Korver, who's one of the better shooters in the league, and for his contract, he's a bargain.
100%. So. No, but that's, you know, I mean, again, you have to look at that. Look, honestly, the best place for LeBron to go, if you took all the emotion out of it and all of the storylines out of it, would be Boston.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say that, too.
Right? Like,
Boston can't afford it.
No, but they could use a guy like... I mean, like, LeBron would fit perfectly in that system.
Yeah.
Right? And now, and they can't afford him if they, you know, if there was a sign-and-trade and they moved, you know, like Horford and one of their young guys for him. But, hey, Angel never do that. Like, what he should do is just trade Kyrie back to the Cavs for LeBron.
Yeah, the problem with that is the Cavs are so far over the cap that they would have to move enough contracts off that they would end up under the cap when they're done. or not the cap, the tax, under the tax when they're done, and the team receiving LeBron would also have to be under the tax when they're done. And they're so far over it, that would be incredibly difficult.
But isn't LeBron the reason why? I mean, he's 30% of their cap.
It is. It is, but it's just the way it is. You can't receive a player back if at the end of the trade you are over the luxury tax threshold.
Right.
So that's part of the reason it makes, and that's in a sign-in trade, that makes trading LeBron in a sign-in trade to a team that's, unless that team is massively under the cap, it makes it really difficult.
Yeah.
This is the mind-numbing thing about the Kyrie trade, because we were so well set up. If Kyrie just could have figured out how to exist alongside LeBron, and we were totally set up for LeBron to slowly kind of fade away over 5 years, while Kyrie increasingly becomes more important to the team.
Yeah, well, my take on Kyrie is, and I tweeted this the other day, but I think he's in that Gilbert Arenas career arc. I would not give him, unless he just looks absolutely dominant this next season, I would not give him big money. Like, he just, to me, looks like a guy that is not going to have a good long-term career. He just has too many knee problems.
Yeah.
I mean, this
and the way he plays that herky-jerky style, and there's not a lot of economy to his game. I just don't see it.
Well, the messed up thing is that's fine for Boston, because unless he starts getting to a point where he does decline and he's demanding too much usage on the court, he fits perfectly fine into their current salary picture with Tatum and Brown locked up over the long term.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
the other thing that I see for Boston is I'm not sure Gordon Hayward can come back from this injury either. Depends on where the tibia break is and if he had any nerve damage, if that's really going to be an issue. So we'll see.
But they've shown this year they don't need those guys.
No, they don't need them now, but they're going to eat up their cap. And
no, but I'm saying, like, Ainge's... If Ainge didn't hang on to Isaiah Thomas because of injury, why would he hang on to Kyrie Irving because of injury?
No, I'm not arguing with you.
But no, I'm just saying, like, I think Danny Ainge, I'm not a fan, but the guy always seems to win trades, and it's going to be a really interesting summer because there's going to be a lot of teams looking to break things up and divest themselves, and he could probably turn Kyrie into Kawhi if he wanted to.
Nah, I don't think so. I don't think the Spurs are that dumb to take Kawhi.
They may not have a choice. They may be in the same position the Cavs were this last summer.
I think they would go somewhere else, or I don't know. I think they would scorch the earth before they would take a bad trade. I just don't think they're...
Oh, I'm not saying it would be only Kyrie. I think they would have to be Kyrie and Brown or Tatum or another young piece or something. I mean, I don't think it would be a straight, you know, one-on-one trade, but
yeah. No, I there is that possibility as well. So
but
yeah, it should be an interesting offseason.
I mean, look, it's not an easy decision. Like, I don't envy the guy that he's had this, cuz you look at it, and like, I don't even think Gilbert's the problem so much as Tyronn Lue has become the problem.
Well, Gilbert's the problem in so much as he's run a shoddy organization for the last year.
Oh, longer than the last year. And, you know, on the live thread today, somebody posted that, you know, LeBron was kind of apoplectic about how badly they got played in the Kyrie trade. It was just like, you know, bring him back or get either Brown or Tatum. You know, not getting back Brown or Tatum in that deal to me was just kind of unconscionable. You know, it's just, it was like, what are you doing? Isaiah Thomas is one of the most, was literally the most overrated player in the league last year. And it just was the frickin' Dan Gilbert and his penchant for short point guards.
Especially, I mean, we were the ones that exposed, I mean, he was pretty injured
right,
at that
exactly.
point. But we knew front and center how much you could expose somehow.
And he was an overrated player with a major health issue. It was just like, what are you doing? You know, make them walk it back. you know, mm-hmm. and trade him somewhere else.
I know, but having said all that, I still believe that if the Cavs had a coach that can actually develop players and make good in-game decisions, they'd still be okay with the guys that they have right now, at least to get them to the finals.
I'm not, at least in the East. Yes. Yeah, I'm not arguing with you.
Yeah.
Look, I think it was going to be even with Kyrie and what they, if they, just rolling it back by and adding Jeff Green and Jose Calderon and, you know, whatever these, you know, and bringing Jetty over, I still don't think they'd have had enough to get by Golden State.
Well, yeah, I don't know, but every year is different. So I still think they're going to the finals. So I'm think they're going to win in Cleveland, and I'm not betting against Boston or LeBron in a game 7.
No, I'm with you. So I'm with you, although I think game 7 is more of a toss up than I would want. But
well, yeah, I mean I'm not saying it's a lock. I was just giving you my opinion.
No, I agree. I'm saying I agree with you. I'm saying I'd probably be a little bit more on the Tom Pestak side of things. Look, I will be happy if the season doesn't end in Cleveland in game 6.
Yeah.
And if they can, you know, take this Celtic team to 7 games, all, you know, we'll get the replay of 2010 when LeBron walks off the floor and, you know, at TD Garden and takes his jersey off for maybe the last time, and, you know.
I don't think we'll see that kind of thing. I think he'll be a lot more circumspect and just a more deliberate about how he goes about things. But
I agree. But I mean, look, he certainly looked bummed out tonight, sitting at the scorer's table in the last 5 minutes. Boston's a tough place to play, and you know it's a tougher place when you're losing. There's not really not much you can do about it, and you just have to sit there and listen to those fans for the last 5 minutes of a game like that. But you know, look, I'm with you. I think I don't have any qualms about saying that I agree with you that I think the Cavs will go home and take care of business in game 6. And then game 7, you know, look, anything can happen in a game 7. And it's all going to be about momentum. I'd love to see a close game. I mean, we've yet to see a game that comes down to the final possession or two in this series, which honestly, I feel kind of like bummed about as a pure NBA fan.
Yeah, especially watching that. Did you watch Golden State Houston last night?
Yeah, I did. That was a really great game.
I mean, it was not necessarily a really well-played game at the end of that game.
No,
but
it wasn't a pretty game to watch.
There was a lot of drama.
Yeah, there was
a lot of drama.
No, but it was a close game. It came down to the last few possessions, and you're like, oh, wow, like finally.
And that's why we watch sports.
Yeah. Well, look, I am okay with the Cavs losing as long as they look like they gave it their best effort and they pushed the team to the brink. Right? I mean, had they done that in game 5, I would have been okay with it, but I guess I'm still okay with it, cuz I think I even said in the write up in the live thread of this, it's like, well, I do believe they'll win a game in Boston. I just don't know if it'll be this one. I think if there's going to be one they win, it'll be game 7.
Yeah.
Because
and I think the Cavs are playing 5-on-9, you know, 5 Celtics and 3 refs and Ty Lue, so
I don't know. I don't think we can. I think 5-on-6 with Ty Lue in there is the right.
I don't know. I was pining for Tony Brothers earlier in the evening, if that tells you anything.
Yeah. And there were some abysmal calls in that game. That second foul on Kevin Love was
garbage.
That's almost one, like, you want to talk about Sakakis overriding the call on the floor.
Yeah.
Like, that was so egregiously.
It was a WWE call.
Yeah, I mean, that was just like, what are you doing? It's just horrible. And then you couldn't breathe on Horford without him getting a call that game. And yet, he, she said that one offensive rebound he had on J.R. Smith, where he's basically got his elbow in the side of his head on the box out, and, you know, basically using him for leverage to jump. It's like, come on, call the game evenly.
Yeah.
So.
What's your feeling for how things will go in Game 6 and 8? Do you think it'll be a blowout? Do you think it'll be close?
I think it'll be another, you know, 10-12 point game. Like, this game wasn't... I didn't really feel like it was a blowout, per se.
Well, Boston was up by 20 in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, I feel like the Cavs will win comfortably. I think it'll be real similar to the Game 4 script where the Cavs get a lead and just kind of manipulate the clock till they get the win.
How about you, RD?
Yeah, I mean, I'm honestly getting a little tired of these games where one team just comes out and throws a haymaker in the first 12 minutes and that's the whole game. But obviously, when we're at home doing it, it's nice. So I could foresee it being a little bit closer than even maybe Game 4. But I'm optimistic about us pulling it out.
Yeah, I feel like the Cavs crowd... I felt like the one thing that ticked me off is I felt like that Boston crowd was really, you know, full of trepidation at the beginning of the game. They were pretty quiet. And I feel like the Cavs crowd can carry them in Game 6.
Yeah, so this is,
more, because they got nothing to lose at that point.
This is something that's been, well, I actually think that the crowd, if things start to get ugly, the crowd's going to go silent, because everyone's going to start thinking LeBron's leaving. But this is something that, I mean, I just got to complain here for a minute, because for years now, I've noticed that the Cleveland crowd is just not, I don't think it's a very good crowd, to be completely honest. I think they know how to react when things are going our way. We know how to react when things are going away, but they don't appreciate hustle plays the way they should. They don't cheer for the little things. They don't cheer when players sit down, which is partially the PA announcer's responsibility to help coax that. But you look at that Boston crowd, and they're just such a more knowledgeable, energetic crowd than compared to the Cavs, who are just... Cleveland fans are just reacting to whatever gets put in front of them.
Are you saying this from being at games or just watching them on TV?
Well, unfortunately, the last few years I haven't been able to get to as many. And when I have been there the past, I mean, it's felt very energetic, but more so just watching it on TV, you just like, when you see a guy lay it out or when you see a guy make a great hustle play, there's just not the energy I'd like to see. And they don't really try to will the team back either when the team needs support.
I think I don't know. I feel like I've seen that plenty of times.
I think you see it on some nights and you don't see it on others.
Yeah.
You get a weird vibe on that. I feel like, so this is my Tom Pestak troll, where I feel like the Cavs have kind of, well, and this is around the NBA in general, but the Cavs have kind of priced the average fan out of the game experience. And the other thing that I kind of feel like, you know, Eli's talked about it a lot, there's some championship fatigue here. There's a sense in a little bit sometimes that, you know, been there, done that, or these guys are expected to win this. They should be this good. Mm-hmm. You know, we have LeBron, we should be winning this. But I also feel like it's also a roster construction issue. Like, they have too many guys that at times spend large portions of the seasons not giving a bleep. you know, the Jeff Greens and the J.R. Smiths of the world. And they're not building that kind of culture with their fan base either. So, you know, Larry Nance is a guy I feel like just can totally energize that fan base. Mm-hmm. You know, so maybe that's partially the way they built that roster. So
I do agree. Knows? Like the team, the flip side is that the team doesn't give them reason to hope or cheer a lot of the time. But I will say, I mean, one, if Cleveland's pricing out its fan base, I mean, you can imagine that Boston and San Francisco are 10 times worse. Although maybe there's just enough rich white douches out there to kind of get that bring the energy.
Yeah. Well, it's a bigger
nothing's worse. Nothing's worse than watching Warrior fans chant, do the Warrior chant where you, if they were students of, forget about basketball, students of movies and film, where they realize is they're actually taunting their own players.
Yeah.
Even though
it's just annoying to hear.
Well, seriously, it's like, yeah. It's like, I want to play the clip for him, like with, you know, David Patrick Kelly, like, you know, like, clicking the bottles together and it's like, what the, you come up with a better chant, guys. Come up with one that's not actually your, yeah. where you're playing yourselves.
Well, the weird thing is, way back, even I think even before this current iteration, I think LeBron 1.0, there was this clip they used to play in game. I'm not even sure it's against the Warriors because I never saw the Warriors, but they had LeBron, I think it was Halloween, they had LeBron dress up as that character and holding the bottles and was like actually saying Warriors come out and play.
Yeah. Which makes sense.
Yeah.
Right? But look, to your point, I mean, look, I live in LA. I've been to a lot of Clippers and Lakers games. I can tell you, like, I mean, you want like apathetic fans, like, come here.
No, that's true. That's like, probably a bad example, yeah. Like,
I've even been here, like, not Showtime era, but like, I was here for the championships with, you know, in the early 2000s with
Shaq and Kobe.
And yeah, I mean, like, people would get riled up, but they're the first ones they're gonna pack up and leave if they're not winning. I mean, you know, and there's always that sort of like the, you know, the wine and cheese crowd and the celebrity ring that, you know, they are who they are. They're not going to get, you know, I've heard a lot of criticism about that, the lower bowl on sports talk radio from Cleveland, yeah. just saying like they're not wearing the shirts or they're not. It's like, well, yeah, because the seats are, they paid like, you know, $500 or whatever for the seats, and they're going to do whatever they want to do.
They don't care about a $10 t-shirt.
No, they don't. And yeah. and that's on the Cavs, you know, like, because they didn't spell out Cavs, I guess, and, you know, because they weren't wearing the shirts. And but, like, that's on the promotions. Like, don't have a promotion. Like, give those shirts to the fans in the upper bowl if you want to spell something out. It right? These are right. the blue-collar people that they're actually, you know, spending a week's savings to get up maybe $100 ticket to, you know, sit up in the nosebleeds and root yeah. for the team.
Yeah.
It does seem like we trail the league in a percentage of people that wear their free t-shirts.
I kind of love that, though. I kind of feel like that's a...
Maybe they need to make them double
Northeast
extra...
Ohio
maybe they need to make them double
way,
extra large.
Woo, shots fired.
Yeah. I mean, I get it if, I don't know, maybe you just dropped $130 on your new Cavs jersey and you want to wear that, but these, like that stupid guy in the Trump hat, who I've actually seen that in two games.
And then wearing a different yeah. hat two nights yeah, later, that was
put
great.
Put your damn shirt on, come on.
Yeah.
Well, on that note, it's probably time to wind this thing down. You guys got anything to pitch? Any big Memorial Day weekend plans other than watching the Cavs win Game 7? And Game 6.
And Game 6.
I hope we don't treat it like an afterthought.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm going on vacation. I think I'll probably miss the finals if they get there.
It's too exhausting.
Yeah, I need a break, man. I need to get the hell out of here.
So my weekend plans, I want to see Solo. So
oh yeah,
I think I'm going Sunday morning.
I keep hearing good and bad. Like, I can't decide.
Yeah, I hear very mixed. So
yeah,
of course, Last Jedi was very mixed.
I did really enjoy Deadpool 2, though, I gotta say.
Oh, I haven't seen it yet. I want to see it. So
if you like the first one, you'll like the second.
And are you into the Marvel movies at all?
Oh yeah.
Did you like the Infinity War?
I did.
I was mixed on it. It was okay.
I mean, there's a lot of stories to keep track of.
Yeah, to me, one of the problems, there was way too many fight scenes. There was more fight scenes than there needed to be honest with you.
Yeah, that's a good point.
I felt like, you know, and they have all these fight scenes with these kind of like these generic In the one movie in Guardians of the Galaxy, they called them paper people. Like, these generic bad guys that are almost just, like, meaningless robots that nobody cares if they get knocked off.
Well, that's how you can kill, like, a lot of them, right?
Well, I know, but it just... Then it just becomes rote. These action scenes kind of just become, you know, filler.
Yeah.
In a way. So, I... You know, that was... That was probably my biggest criticism of it. It was a little... It did not need to be 2 hours and 40 minutes, so...
Yeah. Well, get ready for another one.
Exactly. But I'm excited for Solo, so...
Yeah.
And I do want to see Deadpool 2, so...
Definitely go see Deadpool 2. It's a good time of the movies.
Okay, cool. And I still want to see... what is it? The Quiet...
Oh, Quiet Place. Yeah, you got to see The Quiet Place, man.
Yeah, I want to see that in the movie.
How about you, Artie? Do you get out and see flicks?
Well, as I mentioned on the last one, I have a 7-month-old. So
So that would be a no.
You're just watching the direct to Netflix ones, right? Like Bright and things like that, and the Cloverfield sequel.
Yeah. Although I will say my big joy this, I guess, is maybe last week now, is Brooklyn Nine-Nine getting rescued.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Also. Probably getting rescued is Expanse.
It looks like it, yeah.
Looks like it's going to go to Amazon, so excited about that. And, I've been watching, I just finished the first two seasons of Into the Badlands, which is a total guilty pleasure.
It's a fun show.
On AMC. Yeah, and I had heard they renewed it for a third season.
They did.
But I haven't heard anything.
They did.
Okay, so there's a new season, third season coming out on AMC, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there'll be a third season of that.
Cool.
Yeah, some good TV this
good
summer.
To hear.
There's I mean, Westworld is interesting. This second season.
Oh yeah, I watched a couple episodes of that. I don't.
Yeah.
I don't know if it can hold up.
Americans is about to wrap up.
Yeah, I've never watched Americans, but I've heard great things.
Yeah, I hadn't until really this last year, and my wife and I binged the first. Five seasons, and then we've been watching six in real time. So,
yeah, I listen to a lot of Tony Kornheiser podcast, and he's always talking about the Americans and the Washington Capitals. It's like
Caps, Caps are
they came back and won it.
Yeah,
they're in the finals, right?
Yeah.
Who are they in the finals against?
It's a Vegas team.
Yeah, which is crazy. Oh.
I thought they beat that. Oh, that's right. Yeah, they're gonna play the Golden Knights.
Yeah.
The first expansion team. Are they the first expansion team ever to make?
I think so.
A championship
in any sport, right? Yeah. Any of the four major sports.
Yeah, it's probably easier to do it in hockey than any other sport, too.
I wouldn't know.
Well, just because.
I mean, I watch about as much hockey as I do like high lie.
Yeah. I used to be an enormous hockey fan, but
well, you lived in Alaska, dude. That's probably why.
Absolutely, yeah, and three strikes and all the work stoppages and all that stuff just kind of drained me.
I can never follow the puck with my eyes. I think I have
hockey is a sport that is much better live than it is on television. Yeah.
But that's why I said highlight, because I couldn't watch the little wooden ball go that fast in that game either.
The other thing about hockey is hockey got about 100 times better on TV when everything went HD.
Well, sure. Because you can see stuff. Yeah. I don't know, though. It's just, as a sport, where fighting is legal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I was like...
Quasi-legal, yeah.
But, I mean, they kind of let him go. I mean, if they did that in the NBA, the NFL, or MLB, guys would die.
Probably. I mean, MLB, as long as they didn't take the bat and balls, they're also fat. I do love a good bench-clearing brawl in the MLB. There's always just so many fun subplots when...
Yeah, but guys get suspended for weeks. And in the NHL, it's encouraged, and you just get a few minutes in the penalty box.
Yeah. Did any of you guys read my article about what Tampa Bay's doing with their pitchers? They've started a opener role for the bullpen.
Oh, I did see, because they're using, what's his name, who used to pitch for Romo, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I totally... Could totally see a lot of teams going to that. like, let's just strike out the first four batters and, or, you
know. But why not just go relief pitchers the whole game? Like, why not just say, let's stop paying starting pitchers, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars and they blow their arms out, when we can just pay a bunch of relievers, you know, a few million each, and they can each, like, take an inning or two.
I don't know.
It's a legitimate question. I'm saying, like, I don't know that the game would suffer.
I don't know if the rosters are big enough for that.
Well, right now, but you just expand. Yeah. I mean, well,
I do think
they usually carry eight pitchers in the bullpen along with five starters, so 13 pitchers. Yeah. If you had 13 pitchers, and
you could probably,
because relief pitchers sometimes pitch 2 or 3 days in a row. So
yeah,
you know, if you say, okay, well, no one's going to pitch more than 2 days in a row. Everyone's going to have their specialty, you know, get out certain right-handers and left-handers, whatever. And everyone's going to pitch about, you know, on average an inning or two. You could probably get away with a season of that.
You probably could if you had enough good relievers.
Yeah.
It's an interesting idea.
That said, man, that Plutko kid was really good tonight for the Indians.
I didn't see him.
So, well, I would turn to it at the quarter breaks and halftime.
I would just stare into my phone and post and mutter about Ty Lue.
No, but...
and Jeff Green.
So Adam Plutko, it's only his second start of the year. His first start, he gave up 3 runs in 7 innings against the Blue Jays in that makeup doubleheader that they played. And he gave up... The 3 runs were like 3 solo shots, one which barely went out. But then tonight, because they were like transitioning Josh Tomlin to the bullpen, they brought Plutko up from AAA.
Can they transition him to a nice farm upstate?
Eventually. but they brought Plutko up from AAA for second start of the year ever. Oh, second start in the major leagues ever. And they brought him to Wrigley on the road against the Cubs, against John Lester. And he had a no-hitter going into the 7th inning. Wow. until Rizzo doubled into the corner. But then they brought in Andrew Miller, and he got him out of that inning. And then they brought in Cody Allen for a 4-out save. And the Tribe won nothing. And, you know, it looks like if Plutko can be this good as he's been in his first 2 starts, you know, being kind of yo-yoed up and down, like, they might have found another good young arm like Clevinger. So they've got a really deep, you know, starting squad, which is why I wouldn't necessarily advocate for the Indians to do the plan.
Are they still in first in the Central?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They're.
Yeah.
I think because this win put them one game over 500, I think. I think they're 24 and 23. Yeah. And then Minnesota's just under 500, I think. And then Detroit's lost their last 5 to drop way back. So, yeah. I mean, look, they're. The Indians could probably go 500 for the year and still win the Central Division. That's how bad the Central Division is right now. But if they have any hope of, you know, getting past the Astros, Yankees, and Red Sox, they're gonna have to put it all together. And their bullpen right now is shaky.
Well, it'll be an awesome if they can get another good rookie young pitcher and then not start him in the postseason next year.
Yeah.
This year. So. that was my Terry Francona shot.
Yeah.
Anyway.
At least he knows what he's doing for most of the year.
Yeah, that's true. He's you know, he doesn't have a history of mistakes the way Ty Lue does. Although Ty Lue does have. Does Terry Francona have a ring?
Yeah, he has 2 with Boston.
Yeah, with Boston.
2 with Boston.
Yeah, yeah. So
yeah.
Never mind. He outranks Ty Lue in the ring department.
I did appreciate that line. Or I think it was a trite ESPN article the other day that was like, Ty Lue has 3 rings. 1 as a coach. Brad Stevens has yet to get to the finals. So let's
wow.
Wait.
Yep.
So this just was posted on the thread. Mystery solved. Why Ty Lue didn't play Kyle Korver. Ty Lue says that the Celtics threw us, the Cavs, for a loop by not playing Semi Ojeleye Lou says he didn't play Kyle Korver during the first quarter because Ojale, his matchup, didn't check in. That's bizarre.
Wow.
That is not...
Like, he just doesn't know when to not say things.
I mean, it just sounds like an idiot.
That's you're not acquitting yourself well.
No.
When you say things like that. That's, wow. Well, on that note...
I'm going to need
to take this has been Cavs the Podcast.
You go take a shump after hearing that.
Yeah.
Can we talk about High Life for a few minutes or something?
Seriously.
Yeah, and as always, go Cavs.
Go Cavs.
Go Cavs.
Gotta take a shump.
Thank you for listening to Cavs the Blogs Podcast. Check back soon for some more fun with your favorite bloggers.